This is East Carolina All-American Brian Packard, and we're talking Pirate Baseball and the Sports Objective, the unofficial podcast of the Pirates.
You're listening to Extra Innings, presented by Next Level Training Center on the Sports Objective. Join us every Sunday night on Facebook Live and our YouTube channel as we talk East Carolina baseball. ECU play-by-play voice Corey Glure and others will join us as we look back at the previous week and take a look at what's ahead. Now, let's talk Pirate Baseball.
Welcome in to Extra Innings right here on the Sports Objective. Extra Innings brought to you by Next Level Training Center. I appreciate Trent Brett and Gaynell Brett for their support of the program. And we have lots to talk about. Pirates have a tough week, 1-2 at the office, so to speak. With us right now, Kyle from the LaGrange Barber. How are you, man?
What's going on, Dave, the chiropractor Richmond? Because what you do is adjust.
Yes, that's what we do. Hey, Bubba Rosenbaum, what's up?
Not a whole lot, guys. During the course of a 56-game season, you know, going to have some bumps in the road. But hopefully that's all this is. I certainly think that will be the case. And we'll get back on track starting Tuesday against North Carolina.
And as always, our good friend, play-by-play voice of the East Carolina Baseball Pirates, that's Corey Glure. How are you, man?
Dave, you did great work. My back has never felt better. Thank you for adjusting here on this Sunday. I'm doing well, gentlemen. I'm doing well. I'm sitting outside for this show here today. So I hope that's okay.
Yeah, Changes in Latitudes. Changes in Attitudes, a great album from Jimmy Buffett. And I guess that's what you're doing, a change in latitude, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's lovely right now, although behind me there's a storm clearly brewing over there. So going to watch that roll in here while we talk about some Pirate baseball.
So we'll do that and do the best we can. The Pirates go 1-2 on the week, Corey, starting off with a disappointing game in Chapel Hill. Want to get your thoughts there. I guess we start on Tuesday night of last week.
Yeah, I think the game kind of evolved the way the UNCW game did a few weeks ago. And that I thought the start of the game looked pretty solid for this team. And then as it got into the middle innings, it just seemed like they couldn't catch up to the flow of the game, not necessarily the score, because it was within reach for the first half of that game. It was 2-1 for a while, then 3-1, and then Carolina's kept piling on. But yeah, there's something about the middle innings of that game that were reminiscent of the trip to Wilmington, where it just seemed like they couldn't quite get their feet going at full speed in the middle stages of that game, and Carolina did. So it was a big game for the Tar Heels. They have turned some heads here to start this year, and that was their biggest win thus far of the season. And they came out really from the jump looking like they were ready to play against the top 10 team in the nation, and they got a win and very much deserved to win that one.
And Corey, for the fact that we're usually the hunters, but it looks like with it being a top 10 team, we've got to get used to being the hunted, correct?
Yeah, I mean, there's not going to be another game, I mean, the rest of the year. And there frankly hasn't been a game yet this year in which they are not going to get a team's best shot. I mean, they're going to get everyone's best punch. And this weekend was indicative of that. So I think that's actually kind of the key right now heading into this week, Dave. And we're not going to jump ahead yet. I know we got a lot to talk about. But I think this team now has to kind of wrap their minds around the fact that everybody that they're going to see this point forward is going to give them everything they've got, because they are the cream of the crop in the American, and they're one of the best teams in the nation. And now they have to expect opponents to play up to their level. And that's what we saw this week.
Corey, do you make anything of, you go on the message boards and some of the fans, you know, want to make things out of stuff that I really don't think are issues, but you know, we won at Duke. We won the series 2 out of 3 at Georgia Southern. But a lot of the fans seem to think we have road woes. We can't play well on the road. And I just don't see that. You know, you blow out Elon Friday night. You win the series at Southern, like I mentioned. You win at Duke. I really don't know that the road has a lot to do with it versus, like you just said, teams giving us their best shot.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. And I don't think the venue has done much of anything. The game at Duke was probably the weirdest environment that they've had to deal with because there was truly nobody in there. And so everything that happened was just crickets. And they won that game, and they played really well for a good stretch of that game. So I don't think, you know, Carolina had Pirate fans in the building, and there were about 850 in that building. They're used to an environment like that, an adversarial type environment. You know, Elon only had about 60 in for each of their games, but there weren't Pirate fans there. Fans were getting on them. And so, like, they're used to that environment. To me, the venue hasn't mattered as much as just sometimes, you know, and we've seen it twice now this week, they've gotten teams really best shots thrown their way, and they responded to a lot of them two times this past week that happened.
Yeah, we seem to be inconsistent at the plate at times. Yeah, no, there's not a guy in this lineup that can't hit. There's just times that the whole lineup doesn't seem to be able to get timely hits.
I think that's the key right now is, you know, we're talking about five losses, and it's not a lot in the grand scheme of things, but they all have a similar trajectory to them, and that things have been a little bit inconsistent offensively in those games. And so I think that's now the question to figure out about how this team finds the – you're not going to put up 15 every night like they did Friday night, but – you know, finding a balance of 15 one night and one the next day, finding the middle ground there. And, you know, this is something that, you know, Coach O and I were talking about after the series ended yesterday on our way back to the hotel was, you know, what's the you know, I feel like the major difference between this year's team right now and the 2019 team was that there wouldn't necessarily be an offensive dip from one game to the next like we've seen sporadically here this year, as opposed to the 19 team. And so I don't know where that gets found. They have the talent to do it. I mean, the talent's there to, you know, not have a downswing like we saw on Tuesday night or on Saturday afternoon. It's just a matter of, I think, finding the right combination to do it and guys stepping up to avoid circumstances like what we've seen the last couple of games.
Corey, you talk about Tuesday night's game with the Tar Heels, it was 3-1 there in the middle innings. The Pirates left two on in the top of the fifth. And then from that point on, you already alluded to how the Tar Heels just tacked on in the fifth through the eighth, scoring five runs in those four innings, plating runs in each of those frames. But, you know, one of the differences in addition to the Tar Heels getting four extra base hits, I think two doubles and then two home runs, you also had East Carolina pitching, you know, walk eight batters, which is very unusual. And then the Tar Heels, I think, only walked one or two.
Yeah, and I think that stat, and, you know, I don't remember the strikeout numbers from the Carolina game, but the disparity was huge Saturday, five strikeouts. Okay, so it wasn't actually as big as we've seen in the past, but every time Carolina seemed to hit the ball, it hit hard. And I think, you know, from the very start of that game, it seemed like everything was barreled by that Tar Heel lineup. That's a powerful team. That is a powerful lineup. And, you know, you look at the initial batting average stat and that doesn't wow you, but that's not supposed to at this day and age of modern baseball. You look at the other numbers, like the on-base percentage, the slugging, and they're very high up in that category. And they have just otherworldly talent from around the country. And so they're not going to miss mistakes. And they're also not going to go after mistakes. They're going to let pitches fly out of the zone, and they're going to draw their walks. So that was a common theme Tuesday. It was a common theme on Saturday. And so I think Tuesday is a little more of a twofold operation in terms of that loss than the one we're going to talk about here in a second to Elon. Simply put, Tuesday was not the finest hour of Pirate baseball. It started off fine from my perch. And then much like the game, you know, the week prior in Wilmington, it just kind of devolved.
Let me ask you this, Corey, as far as the Wilmington game and the North Carolina game we talked about in the past, I think last weekend as well. But it seems to me those two games are not bad losses. How do you feel? We're going to get ready to talk about yesterday's game. Is that a bad loss to an Elon team that seems to be pretty young?
Yeah. I mean, to be kind of blunt about it, I mean, I don't think we'll like looking back at that one. I'll put it that way. It will stand out a little bit, but we just talked a little bit about the 2019 team as well, and they had a few in their early going that year. And after that point, they lost to Monmouth, they lost to Air Force, right. They lost to some subpar teams, and then they kind of got their heads around it, and they took off from there. And so I think this week is a huge week for this team upcoming. After this game on Saturday, Elon is going to struggle this year. They are not just young, they're injured. They do not have their Friday night starter, and they are playing freshmen everywhere. So especially after 15-0 win on Friday night, it was pretty clear about four innings in that Elon was completely flushed that one out. And the Pirates, I think, weren't able to do that. And that's why they were able to notch their biggest win of the season, maybe their biggest win of that they'll have all year, because they won't see, they'll have some midweek games coming up, but they hosted a top 10 team, a team they haven't beaten in 5 years. And they grabbed that final game, and it's rare for the Pirates to lose the finale of a weekend, albeit on a Saturday. They did not come out the way we're used to seeing them to finish a series. Elon did. And they got a huge win because of it. And it's a loss the Pirates are going to have to work to make up for.
That's what I was impressed about. You referenced the Elon Young Ball Club that Mike Kennedy has. I was very interested to see how they would respond to Friday night. And they obviously did so with flying colors.
Well, they, after the game, when Coach O and I were packing up our stuff after Friday's game, we noticed that Elon spent a lot of time in right field or post-game conversation. They spent a ton of time out there talking about what just happened and not letting that happen again. They got embarrassed Friday night. The Pirates embarrassed them. And so that was a rallying moment for Mike Kennedy, who has seen it all in 25 years, to a very young group. Like, do you want this to happen again? Or what are you going to do tomorrow? What are you going to be tomorrow? And they threw a guy who is their Saturday guy right now. They think he's going to be their Friday guy, maybe as soon as this weekend, and Spencer Bauer. And right away, he was really in command of this Pirate lineup. And when the pitching is rolling like it did for Elon on Saturday, then the whole team starts to rise up behind that. And it took two pitches in the fourth for them to take the lead. And then from their Saturday guy to their Sunday guy on the mound, who has pitched well against the Pirates in the past, pitched well again. And it just kept going to the Elon dugout, till eventually they cut down the run to the runner at second to end the game. I think that is a moment that Elon will look back on, not just this year, but in the next couple of years, as these young guys develop and grow for Mike Kennedy, as maybe that was the button that was pushed for them to kind of realize what they can be. The Pirates are the victim of that. And now, starting Tuesday and starting this weekend, they're going to have to work on not being that moving forward.
Corey, is it fair to say, I know it's early in the season with the Pirates, but is it fair to say that they're still trying to find themselves after yesterday? Or is that too strong of a statement?
No, I think that's a little strong. I think they know what they are. I think they know how talented that they are, because they are extremely talented. They're the most talented team in the league and one of the more talented teams around college baseball. I think not taking that for granted is probably the next message, because you cannot just walk in after piling up 15 runs the night before and expect you'll do that again. So making sure you're honing in and day out, inning by inning, pitch by pitch. It's a baseball cliche, but you've heard it a lot, not just over the years, but especially this season with Cliff Godwin, staying focused in on what this team can accomplish. Because if you don't, then Saturday happens. And now how this team responds from that will be very, very telling as to what they will be moving forward in the conference play.
Going back to Friday night, Corey, you talk about responding after what happened Tuesday night. You fully expected the Pirates to respond, and they did that in the first game of the Elon series, putting up that sixth spot in the first inning, and then Gavin Williams pitched a heck of a ball game.
That's probably the best he's pitched in my time seeing him. I mean, and getting to second start of the year, 11 strikeouts. It's much more comfortable pitching with a 6-run lead before even taking the mound. But there was a purpose there to them coming out right away, and they knocked out a true freshman pitcher before the first inning was even over. They wanted to come out strongly, and they did. And when you have a guy like Gavin Williams mixing as well as he was doing, it wasn't just the fastball, or it wasn't just the off-speed stuff, like what he had really gone well against Illinois State the weekend before. It was everything. He was really in command of everything that he was throwing. Then you're not going to get beat. I mean, that was a Friday night ace level performance from a guy that we know can be that, and he knows he can be that. That's the type of performance that gets you noticed. Not just as a baseball team, but as him as a pitcher and what he can be moving forward. So to put up 6 runs in the first inning, to let Gavin do the rest until that 8-run seventh inning, and let some of the young guys come in and contribute like they did, that's the type of complete, thorough performance that I think Cliff Godwin knows this team can do night in and night out. To have that be the lone win of the week, now it's the, how does Friday translate over to more contests to keep that a consistent factor of what this team does. That's going to be starting Tuesday, I think, what a lot of people will be looking at.
I know a lot of Pirate fans, between reading social media and message boards, the Tuesday night game is huge, but the reality is that is a huge game. But every single game, I want to remind Pirate fans, including like yesterday, we'll talk about that game here in a second, Corey. But the big picture is, as coaches alluded to, it's a pride thing. Obviously, you want to win all the in-state games, but every single game matters, because if nothing else, let's be honest. I know Coach wants a national seed really bad. We all do. And I know that they've been projected to be the 7th national seed is what I'm hearing. So I know that's a long ways away. What I'm just trying to say is that big picture of things, it is terrible to lose the game, but it's 56 games. Now we got to keep moving and looking forward to Carolina's next team on deck. But certainly we know there's many more games to come. Not to take that for granted, but to know that don't just – like, in other words, last week people were losing their mind over the game, and I know about Elon, but keep in mind that we need to be taking that for the American teams as well to dominate the conference to have a chance at the national seed.
Now, the Pirates will get their shot here to exact some revenge on Carolina in a couple of nights, and if they're able to grab a win on Tuesday, then the complaining about last Tuesday from fans from social media will simmer down. I mean, that's just going to be the nature of the beast. Yeah, it sucks to lose that game. It sucks to lose 5 games this year. That is part of the sport. That is part of baseball, is that you're not going to go 56-0 or now 55-0 this year. We talked about this prior to, that game last week on the show, how important that game was for Carolina. I mean, and I cannot be lost in the discussion here. They came out, they dominated that game from about the fourth inning onward. They played like a team that knew that that game mattered for them early on the season. That's not to say it didn't matter for East Carolina, but it did strongly for the Tar Heels. That's their best win of the year. And there are a lot of people wondering if that is them. They haven't shown much this weekend already against NC State, and they're going to play games tomorrow to try and reset themselves here against the Wolfpack before coming out to Greenville on Tuesday. But that game on Tuesday meant a ton to a first-year head coach and a team that is catching a lot of focus right now in the ACC. So I understand the anger about losing a game to North Carolina for folks out here. Treat it as it is, and that is, you lost a baseball game, and the biggest reason why you probably should be happy about it is that for most of that game, they didn't look great. Like, it's one thing to lose a game and you gave it your best shot, but for a lot of that game, it wasn't their best effort. And so that's what you should be more frustrated about, not about who they lost to.
In Saturday's 2-1 loss to Elon, I mean, yesterday the Pirates did score first. Cadell and Amack had those doubles in the fourth inning. And something else that I don't think we've touched on yet, I had to step away for a moment, was the pitching performance by Jake Kuchmaner yesterday. Don't want that to be lost in the loss.
Yeah, I thought Jake was okay for the start of the game. He had to, I mean, he was putting leadoff men on right away in the first three of the first four innings. The leadoff men were on for Elon. He was in a stressful situation for most of his outing. I think probably the message after that game was there weren't as many tough at-bats from this Pirate lineup as the staff is expecting night in and night out. And Alec Makarevich had one of the best at-bats of the year to get the Pirates on the board in the fourth, a 10-pitch at-bat with two outs and drove in the run with a double. Yeah, he was probably the standout offensively yesterday because there weren't a ton of other folks up and down that lineup that seemed to quite have their footing underneath them. The guy was changing speeds on him, mixing all over the place, was flooding the zone, getting in front of hitters almost every time out. Spencer Bauer was rarely behind in counts. And so the Pirates couldn't quite work that pace to what they wanted to there. Once Cooch Manor gave up the home run in the fourth inning, he pitched great. It was weird. There, all of a sudden, that home run just kind of there was a switch, and he sat down the next nine in a row. And it's amazing how pitchers can do that. Jake is one of the best at just kind of flushing out anything that might have happened prior to that. He threw two pitches in the fourth inning. Suddenly, he was trailing. And after that, he was in command. He was absolutely the Jake Cooch Manor we have seen over the years. He didn't get the support behind him. It turned out to be a Friday night pitcher's duel type game on Saturday. And someone loses that every time out. And Cooch Manor was the one who did it there. He deserved better than that. But Elon threw two of their weekend guys out there, and the Pirates didn't have an answer for either one of them.
And you referenced the strikeout total earlier. East Carolina struck out 14 games on Saturday. And C.J. Mayhew gave the Pirates a chance there to come back in the late innings.
Well, and I think the other key was, I think it was 14 strikeouts to one walk, maybe two walks, not working at bats. And Bauer was getting in front of a lot of hitters all day. So already they're set back a little bit. But the other thing that stood out was Pirate pitching, which was Cooch Manor and Mayhew yesterday, struck out nine, walked none. There was a hit batter in there, but they pitched great. And the fact that losing a game like that is indicative of what can happen in a pitcher's duel. So I think this game could be a little bit of a, hopefully a turning point for this team this week, because that was a long bus ride back on Saturday after that game. I'm sure very little was said, but I don't think much needed to be said after a game like that. If you watched it, if you listened to it, you kind of sense how that game was progressing as it went. And once it got to about the seventh inning, you started seeing storms on the horizon. Then it seemed like not only were they battling a pitch that they couldn't figure out, they were also battling time, because it looked in doubt that game would get finished. So I think the Pirates were kind of caught off guard a little bit on Saturday by what was coming at them in a couple of different ways.
And Corey, as far as on last Tuesday's game, and of course the one we're getting ready to talk about with Tuesday's game in Greenville against the Tar Heels, that will still help them, obviously, with RPI that we actually – I know that we lost the game, but it still doesn't hurt us with RPI, right?
The Carolina game?
Yeah.
No, that didn't hurt at all. The loss Saturday does hurt, but right now, I think the last thing I saw from Warren Nolan was that the Pirates are 10th in the RBI in the RPI, and so that was about a 5-6 spot drop after Saturday's game. So you know, this game coming up on Tuesday, a loss there doesn't hurt. You know, it's in North Carolina, it's in Quad One, it does not impact you in that regard. In terms of that, if we're looking at that already, Thursday becomes a much bigger focus because Cincinnati comes in with not the highest RPI ranking in the world right now. And so can you take care of business to start off conference play your first four game in 3-day stretch after a Tuesday night game? That will be more telling than whatever happens Tuesday.
Do you think from a mental standpoint, Corey, after losing to Wilmington and losing to North Carolina and then being in-state rivals, I don't know if the players care about that as much as the fans do, that aspect of it. Do you think winning Tuesday will do a lot for the guys mentally?
I think it's a win one. I think you're correct, Kyle, and I don't know. The only real attachment that I think most of these players have to other programs, that they will know some guys here or there that are on these programs. Maybe they're recruited by them as well. but they, I don't think that exists as strongly within that clubhouse as it does around the fan base about we need to beat Carolina, we need to beat UNCW, we need to beat State, we need to beat Duke. All these, they would love to beat them, but it's more about playing the ball that they know they're capable of. And every time we've talked about a loss so far this year, they have bounced back with not just a win, but a really good one and a really good looking one, like Friday night was. So it would be very, very shocking if they don't come out looking like the Pirates team we know they are Tuesday night. That might not result in a win. I mean, that's the nature of the sport. But if they don't look the part, if they don't look like the team we know that they are, and they're 17-5, they're a great team. They've not had a great week. If they don't look the part, that's going to stick out more than, oh, it's Carolina. Like, how come we couldn't beat Carolina? Or why did we lose to UNCW? That sort of thing. That is more outside the program than inside the program.
And Corey, as far as pitching is concerned, I know we talked a little bit about it, but do you think will Tuesday night be I guess it's more speculation now. Will that be Johnny Holstaff?
You know, I kind of thought it would be prior to the shift with St. John's and Elon. I thought that Tuesday would be a Holstaff, and then Smith would start Thursday nights in the opener against Cincinnati. Then you'd have Williams and Kuchmaner in the doubleheader Friday, followed by Wiz and Hunt on Saturday. That's kind of how I thought they would structure this week. Now with just two games against Elon done in the books, and you didn't see Wiz and Hunt at all in the last couple of games, maybe he gets the ball to – I would imagine they'd want to have him open the Cincinnati series if they're going to switch something around. Or you have the possibility of Tuesday being – you know, you can throw a guy to start on Tuesday for a couple innings and limit his pitch count and have him be ready to go for Saturday in the finale. And so that's on the table as well right now for the Pirates. Because there was no game today, they are a little bit freer to kind of manage what they want to do with their arms for five games in a very condensed amount of time this week. So this time a week ago, I think we discussed this a little bit. Things looked a little bit more clear. Now they might actually be cleared up even more, but it's a little bit trickier to actually figure out who's going to slot in where right now. So the speculation is I don't know how things are going to look right now starting Tuesday and through the Cincinnati series.
Okay. Corey, something I brought up on the last show, but I believe it was right after you got off, me and Bubba discussed it. I don't know how many conferences are doing this this playing four in a weekend thing, doubleheader, starting the series on Thursday kind of thing. But, you know, I doubt it's very many. Do you think that'll give us an advantage come regional time? I think it would.
Totally, yes.
Yeah.
No question. Yes. And I don't think that was part of the design. I'm sure it might have been discussed around some of the coaches that, you know, this is the worst thing in the world to set us up for once we get into regional play. It will absolutely benefit in that regard. If the Pirates can find their four starters, and you think you have them pretty well set in stone right now, but you're going to have 8 weeks of this. Like, as long as all the schedule stays put, we know how dicey that can be with what happened this past weekend. But yes, that sets up nicely for postseason play. And I think there are one or two other leagues that are doing something similar to this, or they're doing just three games in 2 days, that sort of thing to limit travel. I don't know about the four and three, like what the Americans doing, but I totally agree with you, Kyle. It does, down the line, this should pay a pretty nice benefit to the Pirates and whomever else out of the conference makes the tournament this year when it comes to regional play.
Corey, have you taken a look at what's been taking place around the American this weekend? Right before we went live, I was watching some of the South Florida Texas Tech game. Texas Tech had taken the first two games of that series, and USF was playing them pretty well today, but Texas Tech was pulling away in the middle innings.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me. It's a shame, and it's unfortunate because, boy, the conference needed some sort of marquee weekend here in the last couple of weekends, and they didn't get it. And USF was kind of the last shot at that, because now that some teams have games Tuesday, some don't, And so now it's, you know, you're out of opportunities around the league to pick up some boosting wins. I was watching a little bit of Cincinnati and St. Louis today, and the Bearcats were getting routed by St. Louis, and I think the route continues. So they're going to drop 2 of 3 of that series. So, but again, they didn't throw their ace this weekend. They're lining him up for Thursday, Evan Shauver. So, you know, Thursday night will be a bit of a different look than the next 2 days after for that series. But outside of that, you know, the league has been what it's been, I guess, the last probably month to 5 weeks, which has been frustratingly underwhelming. And now there are not many chances to change that rhetoric. As we've seen in conference play, guys, you know, 2019 was an exception where one team ran away with the league and hid. Usually this is a true brawl. Like it comes down to the final weekend and teams are just punching each other in the face left and right. It always just seems to be bloody and messy down the stretch of conference play. It is rare that the you know, have a team do what the Pirates did in 2019. Now, you know, you're not going to have those midweek games in the middle to try and change things a little bit. You have 32 straight in the league, and it's a lot of teams sitting at 500 right now, and just mathematics will tell you it's going to stay that way for a lot of this play. So the Pirates are going to have to take care of business, and that's easier said than done here because they are the best team in the league, and judging by what I've seen, it's not horribly close at the moment. Even with this past week, they have the talent, they have the deeper pitching staff than anybody does in the conference right now. So can they take care of business in 32 conference games as opposed to 24 this year? It's going to be much harder to do that, but that's kind of what is staring the Pirates in the face this year.
Yeah. Cincinnati, they did actually win the first two games of that St. Louis series, but prior to coming to Greenville on Thursday, you know, they do have a very tough midweek game. They go to Louisville.
Yeah, I anticipate that to be a loss. Like, just to put bluntly, like, I mean, Cincinnati has that they hit bombs. They are a very good home run hitting club. Outside of that, and Evan Shauver leading the rotation has been terrific this year. There is not much wowing you behind that in terms of what Cincinnati has. This week, guys, is more so about what this Pirates team is and can be than maybe any other week thus far. Like, I'm just being clear there because there's no – that's one thing to lose to Carolina on Tuesday night. And the message is pretty clear. We didn't play well. Like, that was the message. The Pirates did not play like themselves for most of Tuesday night. The game Saturday is different. So how do they bounce back from that game? It's much more about inward than who's on the other side of the diamond, not just Tuesday night, but this whole weekend with conference play coming. So now's the time to kind of get back into what we know that they are and put this bad week behind them and make it just that, just one bad week in a season of 12 to 14. And you're going to see a very good Carolina team who's going to play a bunch of tomorrow before coming out here, and you're gonna see a Cincinnati team that in any given environment you should be able to handle. It's now taking care of your own business.
Yeah, if you beat Carolina Tuesday, then take 3 out of 4 from Cincinnati, nobody's gonna remember this week.
Better changes, totally. I mean, the messaging changes from outside this program, the feeling of the fan base changes with a good week this week. I mean, that's this sport. Like it is not football. It's not even basketball. It is a lot can change on a dime. Case in point, Friday night to Saturday afternoon, a wildly different change with what happened in those two games. That is this sport. And it is a bit of a marathon here. Well, we're about nearing the halfway mark of this marathon now. And now the games get, every single one of them get vital. So you have a good week this week and you're for only 5-game week of the year. And, you know, the sun rises again around Pirate Nation.
Hey, something else to note about the Bearcats. The Bearcats have already taken part in at least 2 4-game series this year. They split a 4-game set down at UNC Wilmington and then also had a 4-game series last weekend against Xavier.
Yeah, I think that's smart on their part. They aren't able to book. I don't know if they played six full midweek games yet this year because of their location. So getting a four-game weekend set on the book to eat up some of that. And those have been, correct me if I'm wrong here, Bubba, those two weekend sets he was talking about were the previous two weekends prior to this one that they're playing right now. And so they were in Wilmington not too long ago. They played their Xavier series not too long ago. So they're getting kind of, Scott Guggins did something very smart there in building things up and for how weekend play is going to look for them and doing it right before league play starts. It's a very smart move for a very smart coach. He's one of the better, more underrated coaches that this conference has. And so for him to do that, figure out what he has, figure out what works best for him in a four-game weekend across 3 days. That was one of them was for 3 days. The other one was around four. But to figure out what he can do with that and then prep for that is very, very smart on his behalf.
And they went 2-2 against the Seahawks and 2-2 against the Musketeers. And they correct me if I'm wrong, Corey. I think maybe the opening weekend of the season they went down to Clemson.
Sounds right, yeah. And they got drummed pretty hard by Clemson. I mean, it's a team that, you know, they're going to likely finish in the bottom of this league. But when you're talking about eight straight weekends with a doubleheader, you just don't know how that's going to flush out, regardless of the talent, regardless of the pitching staff. It's all going to be, do you have enough bullets in the chamber on the mound to get through four games in the span of 72 hours? The Pirates think they have that, and the Pirates probably do have that in a leg up or other teams on the conference. But all it takes is one bad outing, and the script is thrown out. So this will be not just an old conference season. This is going to be a very unique challenge for the Pirates here to try and defend their regular season title.
That's what I was going to ask you about, Corey, is that very fact of the pitching going into this unique situation with COVID-19 with the four-game weekends now instead of three like we normally have. How do you feel going into – we're kind of previewing that. How do you feel about that with pitching as far as we've got a lot of young guys, we've got a lot of great guys that are senior leadership, if you will, in the bullpen coming out with Bridges and a Coleman. We've got a lot of great guys that have been in the program for a long time. I guess it comes down for me, there's definitely talent there. It comes down to not only performance, but also to try to limit the as much as we can the injuries, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, injuries can throw a wrench in everything, and that's for every team in the conference. This pitching staff was not built for four-game weekends, but that wasn't the design heading in, but the season and all the changes to it are going to put them in that spot, and they're very equipped to handle it. Like, this year, more than any other year, this pitching staff can do four games in 3 days, and so you have four starting pitchers. Like, you know you have those locked in. But if any one of them waver over the course of the first couple weeks of this conference season, you know, you could throw a CJ Mayhew to start a game. He's pitched three, four innings regularly already this year. If you want to go with a Cam Colmore at the start of a game, you can do that. Like, because he's gone a couple innings already for you this year. Even the last time we saw Garrett Saylor, he went four innings. So, there are people also at the ready in case they need to shift the rotation around, whether it's injury or just they think they can do a little bit better at the start of a game. This staff is ready to handle four games in 3 days. And that wasn't the plan. But once circumstances change for 2021, I mean, Jason Dietrich told me before the season even started, he can't wait for this to start because he knows he has the horses to manage through this. And it starts with, you know, three of your starting pitchers being at least 4 years into the program and another one who acts like he's been around for 4 years already. Like, that, they have the maturity leading the way on the mound. And they also have it at the back end of their pitching staff as well to handle a bunch of games in a short amount of time.
Taking a look at some other scores from around the American, we've talked about UCF on previous episodes of Extra Innings and how the Knights are struggling to find any type of consistency. They're on the verge of going 1-3 this week. It's still, I think, about the fourth or fifth inning, but they're trailing Troy 9-1 in the rubber match of that series, and that would make them 1-3 on the week. And then you also had Houston playing a four-game series with UT Arlington out of the Sun Belt, and the Cougars are trailing in the 10th inning, and if they are unable to come back, they would drop three out of four in that one.
That one's more baffling to me than the UCF Troy one. Troy's not bad, and going on the road to play there is a trick. But UT Arlington is not supposed to be too shabby either. I will forgive my previous comment, but dropping 3 of 4 at home, Houston just kind of the pitching hasn't been as there as I think a lot of folks thought it would be. That lineup already had a couple of holes in it to start. But Houston, this is kind of the second year in a row, even the shortened year last year, Houston has kind of been underwhelming. So that's Todd Whitting is a much better coach than the results that he's been getting. So I'm fascinated to see how they start off league play because they're playing a 4-game series this weekend. And if they're going to get dropped by UT Arlington, what will they do against a Tulane? You know, or they'll see Wichita State, I believe, 8 times this year. So what will they do against Wichita, who is right now probably second in the league in terms of what they've been able to do this season? So UCF doesn't surprise me. They kind of loaded up for one weekend this year, and they got 2 of 3 Ole Miss. And ever since then, they've left a lot on the table. But Houston is a team that's kind of befuddling me.
Yeah, the Shockers are actually who I was going to bring up next, and the Shockers are – having a 4-0 week. They swept Omaha, winning in 3 blowouts, and then they won 5-1 over K-State out of the Big 12 in the midweek. And then you also had Tulane. They're going to have to come from behind against Grand Canyon. I think they're trailing something like 4 or 5-0 fairly late in order not to drop 2 out of 3 in that series.
Yeah, that's another frustrating one. I mean, Grand Canyon has, frankly, poured a lot into their athletic department a very short amount of time, and so they are trying to make strong pushes. We just saw them in the basketball tournament. But Tulane, once you get past Braden Olthoff and the Friday night start of the rotation, they haven't found their answers there behind him yet. So they have arguably the best pitcher in the conference leading their rotation. Behind that has been dicier. And so dropping 2 or 3 to the Lopes of Grand Canyon would not sit well at home. And, you know, Wichita State was a fascination for me last year. Derek Wedge getting his first year at his alma mater. And they're starting to kind of put it all together here, right, heading into conference play. So it'll be a little while before the Pirates see them. But the Shockers wasn't that long ago when they were, you know, they entered the league and were pretty – decent thorn in the side of American teams already. It hasn't been that way since. Right now, they kind of seem like they're second in line right now.
Something else of note, a couple scores from regional perspective. South Carolina's had a bit of a resurgence this year. They had gotten off to a good start last year before things got shut down. But the Gamecocks, I think, were on the verge of maybe sweeping Florida.
And yeah, then they did. Also,
yeah. And then since I'm bringing up that series, did you see what happened on Friday night, Corey, when I think it was the top of the 14th, the Gator, the lefty hit the bomb to center field, and between second and third, he grabbed his junk. and then in the bottom of the inning, the Gamecocks walked him off.
I did not see that. I just saw that South Carolina grabbed all 3 against Florida. I did not see any sort of theatrics on Friday night. Yeah.
Corey, Bubba has his Twitter set where he gets notifications anytime anybody grabs their junk.
Oh, yeah. I didn't know that was an alert. That was you could plug in Twitter.
Yeah. Yeah, he's got it set up that way.
But, Kyle left his features there. No, but yeah, the Gamecocks, obviously, Mark King.
You threw Bubba for a loop, Kyle. Well done. Bubba does not know how to recover from that.
USF old coach Mark Kingston. Yeah, Corey, I don't know why I'm surprised. I would expect nothing less.
Glad I didn't disappoint.
No question. Corey, as far as the teams around the country, are there teams that you're looking at outside the American that are really like the wow factor? I know Vanderbilt's number one in the country. No surprise there. They have a tremendous program. But what are there some teams that are kind of surprising you right now, maybe off the radar?
Well, off the radar. No. I mean, you look at the top 5. I mean, Arkansas is the best team in the country. I know Vanderbilt can make their case, but Arkansas just grabbed a series against Mississippi State this weekend. So, you know, Vanderbilt's a wonder to watch. They're a little bit frustrating to watch for reasons we won't get into here, but they have the best pitching staff for the best two starting pitchers in the nation. They might go 1-2 in the draft this year and Rocker and Leiter. So if you're not going to be able to get Vanderbilt on a Sunday, you're never going to get them, like, it, because those guys are just straight up unhittable right now. But Arkansas almost seems to be kind of under the discussion of Vanderbilt. Every week on Twitter, you see a ton about Rocker and Leiter, and I follow Pitching Ninja, and so he's focusing in on those two, especially with what Leiter's done over the last 2 weeks, and it's warranted. But Arkansas has kind of proven that they're the top of the nation right now. In a year where you were just talking about Florida getting, you know, housed in 3 games by South Carolina, where things have shifted a lot already around the country, Arkansas has been kind of the one team that hasn't moved from the position. So that they're the best team in the nation right now. And to me, you even have a slight bit of a drop off to Vanderbilt after that.
Core, you bringing up Leiter, that was going to be the other thing that I was going to mention. Him having the chance to throw consecutive no-hitters, and Trent Britt from Next Level Training Center made an excellent point. They were beating Mizzou, 11-0. So mm-hmm. It was refreshing to see Coach Corbin and that staff do what's in their long-term interest instead of just trying to set that record.
Yeah, I think he went 7 innings on Friday or Saturday. It was Friday night. My apologies. And coming off of a 9-inning game the weekend before, I don't know how much 2 more innings would have done for a guy that's already developed and a guy that will be a very high draft pick this year. So I see that. I'm not disagreeing with Trent at all in that regard, but something tells me they might have been able to make a slight exception for Jack Leiter, regardless of if he had fired one the week before or not.
No question about it. Kyle, did you have a question?
No.
Y'all should go quiet on this, man. Corey, you've got him speechless now. I've never seen Kyle speechless.
I mean,
I'm listening to the loud thunder heavy rain.
Yeah. Oh, I'll try to make a comment if Kyle can get another jab in.
Well, I take my jabs where I can get them, Bubba. I'm just here for entertainment purposes only until football season. Dave, the weather has me distracted. It's getting pretty stormy here. I really don't have anything else. I mean, looking forward to this week so the boys can get back on track, honestly. I mean, Tuesday night, to me, from the fan standpoint, is probably bigger than it is from the player standpoint. I think a win Tuesday night will get all the smiles back on the fans' faces.
Bubba, do you want to go now to our PGX? We'll start off with a PGX pitcher of the week.
Yeah, earlier we talked about the performance that Gavin Williams had in Friday night's game against Elon. And Gavin went 6 innings of shutout baseball, 4 hits, and those 11 Ks to just 1 walk. So Gavin Williams is the PGXGloves.com pitcher of the week. And then it was a struggle for the offense. We mentioned 2 games with only 1 run, but Thomas Francisco has just been a hit machine, had a hit in every game, 3 singles and a double. In addition to a walk, 4 of 11 on the week for Franny, and he is back-to-back on the PGX Player of the Week.
Yeah, and I'll just reiterate this point again. We got way too many good players at the bat or at the plate with the bat in their hand to only put up 1 run in 2 games in a week. That's not going to happen again.
I think Coach Godwin would probably agree with you on that one, and I do as well. I think if you would have told me the Pirates would have 16 runs in 2 games against Elon, that would have been a pretty easy 2-0 weekend. And so, but 1 game does not carry over to the next. And so you're dead on, Kyle. Like this lineup's too talented to be, you know, they put up 17 runs in 3 games this past week, and they're 1-2. Like that doesn't jive with what this program is building, what they know that they can be, and what is being stressed to them on a regular basis, maybe even more so now after this weekend, that they can, like, that's a 3-0 week for most teams, and it probably should have been at least 2-1 for this team. But as the venerable Yankees broadcaster John Sterling says, that's baseball season, and now you got to bounce back here on Tuesday night.
Yep.
Corey, one more point before we let you go. Is would you say that as far as the hitting is concerned, I forgot to ask you early on, generally speaking for this past week, is it not putting the ball into play? I know Coach Godwin has put an emphasis on that as far as being the hitting coach. Like, is that a fair thing to ask?
Yeah, totally. I mean, they got struck out 14 times yesterday.
Yep.
And you know that's just not gonna do it. I mean, you think about the Pirates struck out 18 Eli hitters Friday night. What was their run total? I mean, that was a big old zero. Like, you can't do anything with that. Put it in play, see what happens. I mean, that you look back at the five losses thus far, and I think it's important to keep stressing that we're talking about five losses in 22 games right now. But the last, you know, two of the last, you know, two of these five have happened recently. But these games have all had similar looks offensively to them. So put it in play. Be tougher mentally at the plate. The physicality's there because they can hit home runs on you. The best home run hitting club, one of the best in the conference right now. Cincinnati might have caught them this weekend, but they can do their hit and runs. They can do their slash plays and do all of that. They're all equipped to do that. Are they locked in to their at bats mentally? Because once it got to a certain point on Tuesday, it certainly didn't look like it. And it was a battle yesterday as well. So there's a common thread between the defeats right now. Just there's a pretty common thread between the wins. How do you get, you know, keep going on the positive side of that as opposed to the negative side of that? That's now the message here that this coaching staff is relaying to these guys, and how, you know, that you might come out and just clobber Carolina on Tuesday. That'd be great. That will mean nothing for Thursday. So how do they respond after a game like Saturday? That, you know, it's not just looking back on what happened. It is forgetting what happens as well and saying, you know, that has no bearing on what we're about to do. And that has been stressed probably more offensively than pitching-wise at the moment.
And no doubt it's going to be a big week as we're going to put the games up on the screen. For those listening, it'll be Tuesday night, March 30th at Greenville, ESPN Plus, and of course our good friend Corey. Does that mean 6:15 on the Pirate IMG Learfield IMG network?
Yep, Tuesday night 6:15 with the Bud Light Dugout Show, and then 6:30 first pitch. And yeah, note the Thursday start time there as well. That tripped me up over the weekend. That's a 4 o'clock opener against Cincinnati on Thursday, with the doubleheader on Saturday or on Friday at 1 o'clock. So 15 minutes before air for Tuesday and Thursday and Friday and Saturday. And we'll have some unique program to actually keep locked into. So stay for that.
And the guys, have you heard, any of you, if we are going to 50% attendance or are we sticking with 30% for now?
I believe they're working on expanding. I don't have a firm number, nor do I know what date they're eyeing that down for. But those discussions are being had about, you know, the issue they're running into is, you know, the mandate here from the governor. It's all about seated capacity. So even though the number for Clark LeClaire is 5,000, that includes standing room in the jungles. And so that's why there are chairs out there right now, is because they're putting seats out in the outfield to count towards capacity. So finding more room to try and put more chairs out there, or spacing out people properly within the box seats and the bleachers, those are discussions being had right now. I don't know if it'll be for Tuesday or this weekend, but I know that they've been talking about it since that order came down.
Just get a roller and go 6 feet.
Yeah, and they might be doing just that, frankly. I mean, see, they might just be the yardstick out, putting it down the bleachers. But yeah,
I see Corey out there with a tape measure.
Yeah, they're working. I think they were trying. They actually had the plans in place to get another 100 in. If St. John's was in town this weekend, they were looking at 1,300. Yeah. They had done a little bit more, and so they were already kind of moving forward with trying to get more folks in there. Now the key is finding the space to do it.
Okay. I mean, I know there's got to be more to it than that, but when you hear it, it's guys, you got to be 6 feet apart and if it's the capacity. So, I mean, I'm just taking a roller 6 feet, right. 6 feet, 6 feet, yeah, 6 feet.
Spread out your arms.
Yeah.
Well, it's also, you know, it's not just 6 feet, one chair, 6 feet, one chair. You got to sculpt out four for, you know, a family or two for a couple of season ticket holders. That's
true
sort of
enough. Thing. Yeah, true enough.
So,
true enough.
Yeah, so they're breaking out the yardstick and they're breaking out some charts to try and get as many folks as safely out there as possible here. And hopefully it'll be coming up soon, but know that they're working on it.
Yeah, for folks want more information about that, Kyle's question, check out Thursday's Pirate Radio Live. Ryan Robinson was on. It was an excellent interview, and Ryan was just talking about the things that Corey just mentioned as far as still having to be 6 feet apart and how previously it had been 1,200, but they were hoping to get it up to maybe about 1,500 moving forward at the 50% mark. So we shall see. I know my dad, who's a season ticket holder, who had not received an offer to buy season tickets thus far, received one last week prior to what was hopefully going to be that series at home against St. John's, and he's going to buy his season ticket.
Yeah, nice. And I think it's, you know, the daylight's growing pretty brighter here with what we're dealing with right now. I'm about to get jabbed for the second time on Wednesday. But I think this last week has shown that we're not out of this yet. I mean, we knew at some point a disruption was going to happen to the schedule, and it did. The Pirates were able to play some games, though, in spite of that, they were looking to. But, you know, it's not as simple as getting 2,500 in that park. No, there's a lot more work here, and we're still, you know, we're not out of the woods yet, even though it seems pretty close to the end. So, very cognizant of that. So. Still, if you don't get a call, unlike Bubba's father who just got one, understand that there's a reason for it, and that, you know, we're still not at a point as a population, as a society, where we can do that just yet.
No, and just to quick COVID discussion, I think we're about to see with college spring break and now Easter spring break coming, I think we're about to see one more surge before vaccines get up and up to everybody, and we can really starting to get back to normal by the end of summer.
Well, and keep in mind, ECU doesn't have spring break this year. Like, that's by design as well. They're trying to keep kids on campus, or at least in the area. And now, with the rollout here going pretty well, especially in the state, now everyone's going to be eligible here starting on the 7th. To if you can find a vaccine to that you can go do it, as long as you're at least 18 or 16, I forget what the age cutoff is. You know, we're nearing the end of this here, but we still got to be diligent in what we do, and the school is being diligent about what they're going to do in terms of baseball attendance.
Yeah, and if you want a vaccine, people, and your county has not opened it up to everybody just yet, I do know Greene County and Jones County are both wide open to anybody that wants it.
Keep looking around. If you want it, go find it.
Corey, appreciate you very much. We'll work on our movie lines. You guys have anything for Corey? It snuck up on me this week. I just realized right before the show. So do you have anything, Kyle?
You know, I had something the other day that I wanted to mention to him, and it has slipped my mind. If I can think of it, I'll hit him up on Twitter. But it's gone right now. But there was something I had thought of that would have been a good line, and it's left my brain. You got anything, Dave?
No, I'm going to work on it. I promise this week, Corey, that'll be my homework. It was a really rough week, so this is an easier week for me, a normal week, if you will. So we'll work on that and be ready for next week. And I appreciate you so much for coming on, and hopefully the Pirates can have a much better week.
A good week flushes out a bad one pretty quickly, and let's hope that's on the horizon here, gentlemen.
And no doubt, how can people follow you on social media, and then we'll let you go?
Twitter, at Corey Glore. That's with an E, Y, and a double O. My name says that right there. Go to the Pirate Sports Network Twitter account as well. We turn out highlights after baseball wins as well. So if you're not able to listen to the broadcast, then you can hear how we sound, how Coach O and I describe exciting moments of Pirate baseball. And then I'm on Instagram as well. And then if you feel like finding me on Facebook, go for it. But Facebook is Facebook.
All right. Appreciate it, buddy, and we'll be listening to you and Coach, and looking for a much better weekend. We'll talk to you next Sunday.
Thank you, gentlemen. Talk to you later.
All right. Thanks, Corey. Appreciate it. All right, as we're moving right along, guys, before we go, we obviously have a great guest we're going to have on coming up soon. Nikita Koloff, the Russian Nightmare, has agreed to come on, so we're working that up. In fact, if you're watching live or on our archives, we have that on the screen. But the Russian Nightmare coming on, and I know, Kyle, maybe you'll get a chance to wrestle him, or you think you can take him now?
No. Nikita's retired, has been for several years now, but you know, I think my lack of cardio and my bad knees would probably do me in with the Russian Nightmare. A good day. But it'll be nice to have a conversation with him about Ivan. Obviously, Dave, you and I both knew Ivan. And yep. Lisa, thank you, did. I knew him. And he lived in Eastern North Carolina for years there in Winterville. I used to run into him all the time in Greenville and Kinston. So can't wait to talk to Nikita about that and talk to the Russian Nightmare about when Magnum T.A. Got in the automobile accident in his Corvette in Charlotte, and in the middle of his feud with Nikita, and Dusty made the decision as the booker at Jim Crockett Promotions at the time, NWA, to turn Nikita babyface and team with Dusty. And it really was something that the fans didn't expect, and it worked. It was an interesting decision on his part, really, when you think about it, if you understand wrestling booking, and it worked really well. And one of the most hated guys in wrestling overnight became one of the biggest baby faces at a time, Dave, when everybody hated Russia and the Soviet Union. To Nikita to become a baby face with that Russian gimmick was unique and really surprising that it worked as well as it did.
It really did. Magnum TA, of course, one of the best wrestlers of all time, and had that unfortunate accident, like you said. Dusty Rhodes, the American Dream. My gosh, he could cut a promo better than him and Ric Flair. But
that's what I should have gave Corey. I should have gave Corey a little get this one in, Corey, if you happen to go back and watch this. I've dined with kings and queens, and I slept in alleys and ate pork and beans, baby.
Yeah, baby, get the job done. For sure, we're looking forward to that. By the way, tomorrow night, folks, Monday night, we'll have a very special show, being the Tuesday night's game in Greenville. So we'll push our Tuesday night show up to tomorrow night. We have Sutton Young. He'll be on with us. He's been working with us behind the scenes. Also, he's been working with ECU, so we appreciate his hard work on the Sports Objective and with ECU Sports with our good friend Brian Medor. Finally got to see a lot of the guys. It was good to be at we'll also have our be talking about spring football and how that's going. We're speaking of football, we're going to bring on our good friend Terry Gallagher. He's got a big announcement he'll make about what he's been up to. I'll save that for the show. And hey, guys, some good stuff there. Do you have guys have anything before we go?
No, just looking forward to getting back on track this week. I think the fans need that Carolina win. I think the team just needs to win. I think a 4-1 week, a 5-0 week would be unbelievable. But I think a 4-1 week, no matter how it comes, would get things back on track, and everybody would be smiling. And I'll mention this about football, man. If you guys haven't go to our Facebook page, the Sports Objective on Facebook, we have lots of post practice reports for spring football up. And if you guys haven't checked out the post practice reports, you can. Y'all know, Dave, you were out there. Mike Houston is all over himself. You can just tell he knows that we're going to have a good football yep. team this year. His energy, you could just tell it. And, you could just feel the whole vibe is, I think it's going to be a fun fall this year.
No question about it. Let me, by the way, before I forget too, not only that, Kyle, but our good friends at Next Level Training Center with Trent and Gainell Britt. I appreciate them for sponsoring this show, Extra Innings. And you can go to nextleveltc.com. Maybe you need some, your son or daughter needs some hitting instruction. They've got everything. You can give them a call to find out more information. 252 is the area code, 756-NEXT. 252-756-NEXT. Again, you can go to nextleveltc.com. They have a tremendous Facebook page. Love that. They put up a lot of cool stuff, updating the fans on different guys that have come through there and some great observations. So check that out. Also want to give a shout out to Mark Minakazi for PGX Gloves. I've got to go up there this week to order my daughter's stuff for her softball, but you can go to pgxgloves.com. They've got all kinds of cool stuff, right, Kyle?
Yeah. All our golfers out there again, we're getting into the spring, the heart of golf season. So go get you some golf gloves. They got custom golf gloves. Get your batting gloves for baseball, softball. They got wide receivers, gloves for football. They got all kinds of gloves for your sporting needs. And don't forget about the swag. Check out that logo. If you like that logo, they got it on all kinds of different shirts and all kinds of different colors. PGXGloves.com. Put in code ECU in all caps. Save yourself 25% at checkout.
It's going to be thanks to them for their sponsorships of the show very much. And Bubba, do you have anything before we go?
Nope.
All right, that's easy enough. I'll let you take Riley to go ahead. And I know that you guys are going to have a great season. Looking forward to my son Alexander playing baseball, my daughter Mackenzie playing softball this year. All right, so appreciate Corey Glore, the great play-by-play voice of the ECU Baseball Pirates. Don't forget our great programming as always. And don't forget you can like our Facebook page. You can follow us on Twitter at TheSportsOBJ. And don't forget, by the way, fans, to subscribe to our YouTube channel. Really big. And we've got a lot of great promotions on social media to come this year. All right. Until next time, you've been watching Extra Innings, brought to you by Next Level Training Center right here on the Sports Objective. Good night, everybody. Go Pirates.
That concludes this week's edition of Extra Innings, presented by Next Level Training Center on the Sports Objective. Join us next Sunday night as we will once again talk East Carolina Pirate Baseball. Be sure to follow the show on social media, at TheSportsOBJ on Twitter, at TheSportsObjective on Instagram. Like and follow our Facebook page and subscribe to our YouTube channel. Listen to the show pretty much anywhere podcasts are found. As always, we appreciate you tuning into the show. Go Pirates!